We've been studying for the last couple of weeks. For those visiting with us, we are very soon at the church here. We're going to go through the process of looking among ourselves to see if there are men that we can appoint to take on the work of elder and shepherd. And we've been looking at various lessons concerning that. In the past, we have looked at the roles that elders and churches play together. We looked last week at qualifications and various things concerning that. It's a different type series than what we did prior. 3 years ago when we went through this, there were not elders. And so the lessons were focused on how does a church that doesn't have elders, how do we get them? This is different. So we've been looking at it from a different avenue, maybe a different perspective. And I hope it's been beneficial. And we're going to continue in that today with the idea of how can we prepare ourselves? How do we do that? Churches need elderships. But the thing is, we don't just need churches to initially have elders put into the work. Churches from that point on need to continue to develop men and find those men and recognize those men. And men need to develop the desire so that churches don't just have elderships, but there is this continuation of elderships. How many times do you know a church that in the past there was elders, but there aren't now? Well, what happened? What happened is a generation of men came along and apparently didn't qualify themselves. Something happened that prevented that from being able to take place. And that's what we want to prevent. And that's what we're going to look among ourselves at the part of our growth. And we're just taking inventory. But in order for churches to continue to develop elders, well, that means men continually have to prepare themselves. That's what that means. It's a necessary conclusion from that. And so here are some questions that can be raised. So you know, that's just, but there are so many qualifications. We studied last week, when you add all those up in Timothy and Titus, you've got 20 plus qualifications. One person can't do all that. I hope nobody here believes it. Because we spent a lot of time last week looking at the fact that over 80% of those, every Christian in this room is expected to have. With the exception of those very specific ones, every Christian in here is supposed to have them. They can be done. They can be put into people's lives. And someone said, well, okay, you're right. There's all those special qualifications. So that means, well, I'm going to have to get married and have some kids. You're probably going to do that anyway. So that's not going to solve the issue. We're talking about spiritual growth. How can we do that? How can we prepare ourselves spiritually? And we're going to look specifically today with the idea of how does a man prepare himself spiritually to one day take on the work of elders. So you young ones, you pay attention. You middle-aged ones who's just starting out with your families, you pay attention. But everybody in here needs to pay attention. Because again, I'm just going to repeat what I just said a moment ago. Blameless, just, holy, temperate, hospitable, not given to greed. You're all supposed to have those. We're all supposed to have them. How can we go about developing those type character traits within us? We're specifically looking this morning, obviously, with men qualifying themselves to be elders. But you make personal applications. How do we as individuals begin to do and make that character change? Well, let's start with some things that's not going to be the answer. We want to continue to have an eldership here. It's not just going to be a matter of time. You can't just wait it out and wait for the calendar to flip. Are you with me in 1 Timothy chapter 3? We looked at this last week, just a reminder. One of the qualifications is it's not a novice. That doesn't emphasize age. Age is not mentioned. What's emphasized is experience. And we get the idea of we just look at the calendar. We think that spiritual growth and physical growth must be the same. They are not. You can be a 50-year-old infant spiritually. Carl and I got to be in the room one night when a 94-year-old man was baptized. 94 years old. Babe in Christ. It's not just a matter of time. It's not just a matter of waiting until your hair turns gray or falls out. It's not just a matter of time of getting old enough to retire. It's not talking about physical maturity. to talk about spiritual maturity. Spiritual maturity is not measured by a calendar always. It's not just a matter of attending. Oh, if I just come enough, if I just show up enough, if I'm consistent enough, you don't go from a pew filler to an elder or a deacon from one Sunday to the next. It's more than just showing up. And it's also not just a matter of information. Just cramming our head full of stuff and a lot of memorizing. We're going to talk about knowledge in just a minute. Knowledge is necessary. You got to be able to convict the gainsayers. You got to be able to teach. But it's not just a matter of that. Give a physical example we'll all be familiar with. Every now and then you'll see on the news, there'll be an article written about it or some form. There'll be, I guess what they would call a protege, if I'm pronouncing that right. A 12-year-old who ends up at Harvard. A 10-year-old in one of the Ivy Leagues, busting A's out of every class they take. Very, very knowledgeable. Still 12 years old. You can call them mature? No, they're 12 years old with a bunch of knowledge. But we can do the same thing spiritually. We can have a lot of knowledge, but we can't apply it. We can have a bunch of knowledge, but it hasn't changed our life. It's not just a matter of cramming our head. So it's not just time. It's not just getting here. It's not just learning a bunch of stuff. Then what is it? How can we make and apply and qualify and produce men that are necessary so that elders can be appointed in every church? A lot of bishops here today. So many bishops here, I would guess that there are probably some bishops here who worship in a church where there is no elders. That's common. Sadly, that's common. This is a problem everywhere. How can we fix it? How can we, at the individual level, prepare ourselves, help prepare others? That's what we're looking for. Before we begin, we'll tell a quick story. We mentioned Wednesday night, Betty let us know David Hartzell's having a new round of health issues, and we certainly need to remember him in our prayers and the family. When David was preaching, he told me one time, he was been young then, his kids were young, so he would probably have been 30-ish, early 30s. He went to a meeting somewhere up north, but the kids were in school, so Belinda stayed home with them, and he took with him an elder from whatever church he was preaching at the time. So David and this elder goes up to wherever it was they went. And they went to a church that had never had elders before. And there were people there who had never seen in the flesh an elder of the Lord's church. In any form or fashion, they'd never seen one. And you know David and how funny he is, the stories he could tell. The point that he was saying, he said, yeah, they'd seen thousands of preachers. They didn't care that I was there. But it was like, he said, I was traveling with the Rolling Stones. Everywhere he went, every house he went into. He said, those kids just kind of looked at him And at one point, David overheard this. This wasn't a conversation there in a public setting. But he heard a young teenager go over to that man. And he said, how did you become an elder? What did you do? How did you do this? And first of all, me and you can't hardly conceive this idea that to be so in shock at seeing an elder because they had never seen one. But that's, in some places, that would be true. And his question was, how did you do it? And the answer that that man gave him was, now of course, I'll have to paraphrase. I'm sure I don't have the exact way, but the way the image that David relayed was, he said, how did you do it? Well, I started at a young age trying to prepare myself. Now, what else he said after that? We don't have a conversation on it. But how did you do this? How did you become able to do this work? And what we find out is the answer is not as complicated as we might first think. The answer is work with an exclamation point. The answer is get busy and get busy now. That's how you prepare yourself. That's how we grow in any form or fashion to a spiritual work. That's how maturity takes place. It's not complicated at all. Turn to Colossians chapter 1. It's not a complicated equation. It's just that we don't often do it. We don't take it as serious as we ought to. Would you turn to Colossians chapter 1? And you might want to put a marker there. We're going to be doing the basis of our study from this text today. And Paul is not talking to elders specifically or about the production of elders or the preparing of elders, but he's talking to Christians about growth. And the things he told them are things we can put to application. We can put to our life. The letter to the Colossians is one of the what we call the prison epistles, written while Paul was under house arrest, AD 63, 64-ish. Interesting thing is, Paul, if we've got the travels right, Paul never went to Colossae. He's never been there in the flesh. He's never went there like he did to Corinth or to Ephesus or so on. He has gotten word about them while in prison, while in Rome. A man named Epaphras came, and Epaphras kind of filled them in, told them about their growth, about their problems, and Paul writes them out of concern. He doesn't know them. They don't know him. It's not a personal relationship, but they are brethren. And he knows they're having to deal with Judaizing teachers. That's very, very specifically outlaid in the letter. There's some very good hints that they were having to deal with some Gnosticism. There's some things that kind of lead to that. And Paul is writing to help them and to correct some false things that's going on there. But he begins, I want us to look in chapter 1. He kind of, to paraphrase, he says, Epaphras told me about you. I know some things are going on. He says, I know you appreciate us. And then he says, I appreciate you too. Everything I've heard, I'm very thankful to hear. In verse 8, he says, he, talking about Epaphras, he has declared unto us your love in the Spirit. So Epaphras has told him about the church. And now verse 9. For this cause, we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you. Paul doesn't know them. He's never been there. It's not one of his circuits. But he appreciates them. He loves them. They are his brethren. He is concerned. And he says, I am praying for you all the time. And then he tells them what he's praying. And we're going to hurriedly read through it. Then we're going to come back and break it down. But I just want you to imagine for a second. Somebody praying this about you. For this cause we have since the day heard of it, not ceased to pray for you, to desire that you might be filled with the knowledge of his will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that you might walk worthy of the Lord to all pleasing, being fruitful in every good work, increasing in the knowledge of God, strengthened with all might according to his glorious power, unto patience and long-suffering and joyfulness. How'd you like somebody to pray that about you? How would you like a righteous man fervently praying that about you? Because as James reminds us, and as we well know, fervent prayers of righteous people avail much. Paul's a pretty fervent fella, huh? And here's what he's praying. And if me and you can fulfill this prayer, if we will do our part, we know the one who's hearing it. We know God will do his part. If we do our part to fulfill a prayer like this, those qualifications that we looked at last week, they're going to become very, very attainable. And so we're going to just kind of look back and look at some of the major topics, major points that we can see from some things Paul says to the Colossians here. And the first thing he tells them is, work hard. How can we prepare our younger men? How can we prepare our people to become elders and deacons in the future? Well, just like that man that was traveling with David, you start today. His answer was, I began working a long time ago trying to prepare myself. Amen to that. We work to gain knowledge. And look at some of the phrases there in verse 9. The prayer was, I desire that you might be filled with knowledge, filled with wisdom, and spiritual understanding. Remember, it's not all about knowledge. You can be this 12-year-old protege, but there's the wisdom that comes with it. There's the spiritual understanding that comes with it. We need to work hard to gain this information, gain this knowledge, gain this wisdom, gain this ability to make applications from our knowledge. That's what we have to do. Individual level, men, women, married, single, old, young, we need to be doing this. We need to fulfill this, and then we're on our way to all those changes of character that Timothy and Titus we're reminded about. I want to have you turn to Matthew chapter 5. Remember in the Beatitudes, the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed is he who hungers and thirsts. Can you imagine? In that case, the Beatitude, we're talking about righteousness. Imagine a hunger and a thirst for knowledge. Hunger and thirsting for spiritual understanding. Hunger and thirst are some of the greatest passions that we feel. Do you know what hunger has caused people to do? Resort to cannibalism. Thirst has caused people to throw their face into murky, muddy, crust-infested water and drink it up. That's how much the power of thirst can affect an individual who is thirsting. Not thirsty like me and you get, but thirsting to death. We'll drink anything. Those who are hungry will eat anything. We'll throw a grasshopper in our mouth and tell God, thank you. That's what hunger and thirst can do. Now, can think about the character changes that happens in our life when we have a desire, a hunger and thirst for spiritual knowledge, spiritual understanding, and spiritual wisdom. That's where this begins. Now, what happens then? Well, let's go from verse 9 to verse 10. What happens? So we're trying to basically cross the bridge here, right? You and I work hard. We take it serious. We're going to start working to gain more knowledge. And we're going to start working to apply that knowledge. We're going to try to be more in tune with spiritual knowledge and information and awareness. And that will lead to growth. Look at some of the phrases in verse 9. Knowledge, wisdom, understanding. Now look in verse 10 and 11. That you might walk worthy of the Lord to all pleasing, being fruitful in every good work, increasing in the knowledge of God, strengthened with all might. The descriptions kind of change. Verse 9, knowledge, wisdom, understanding. Verses 10 and 11, fruitful, increasing, strengthened. You go from the information when applied right. It leads to growth. It leads to that maturity that older man with David was saying, I started a long time ago preparing myself. I began to study. I began to take it serious. And that brought about changes in my life. That brought about growth in my life. And some phrases that verses 10, 11 kind of lead to. The idea of being grounded, of being steadfast, of being stable, of being convicted, of being consistent. And I got news for you. We will recognize that in people. Do you recognize that in people? We do, don't we? It's the part of it. These are the things necessary to make it possible. Look in verse 10, a phrase that can get overlooked in all the jumble. Fruitful in every good work. We've got to be careful about thinking to ourselves, well, I don't have this qualification yet, but I'm double on the other one, so it all balances out too. Fruitful to every good work. We take it all serious. We work on all of those character admonitions that Titus and Timothy were given. Every good work, again, talking about being well-grounded in the faith. If we bear this fruit, we will meet all of those character qualifications. And again, it'll be noticeable. It will be recognizable in others. So what do we do? How can we prepare our younger ones? Lord willing, if the Lord hadn't returned and world wars hadn't broke out and there's still a church here 50 years from now, some of you will still be here. Some of you will still be alive. If things all being considered, average life expectancies and so on, there are some people, Lord willing, will still be here 50 years from now. Will you be an elder? Will you be the wife of an elder? Will you be a deacon? Will you be the wife of a deacon? Will you start now taking it serious and preparing yourself? Because that's what it takes. And that's why so many churches are without us, because It's never emphasized. It's never mentioned. You just get used to it. And we need to be bearing fruit. And that fruit can only come about, increasing to every good work, that only comes about after our careful study, our careful understanding, our work at knowledge, hungering and thirsting after that. Turn to Colossians 3. Turn over a couple pages. We're going to work hard, and we're going to gain knowledge and wisdom and understanding, and that will in turn, Lord willing, lead to fruit. It's going to lead to production. It's going to lead to action, a change of life. Growth happens. Maturity happens. And then there are things that has to be put to death. Colossians chapter 3, verse 5. Mortify, deaden, kill. Stomp them till they have no blood left, is the idea. Mortify your members that are on the earth. Fleshly pulls, fleshly lust. And then he makes a long list. It's not a total list. He gives enough to make sure the information's out there. Mortify your members that are earthly. Sexual immorality. Uncleanness, evil passions, evil desires, covetousness, which is idolatry. You can't keep them in your life, is the point. So here's what happens. We begin to hunger and thirst a little bit more. We begin to take spiritual knowledge and wisdom a little bit more serious. And by taking it serious, it is going to lead to changes of life, changes of actions, changes of character. And things are going to be removed from our life. And many times, this is the sticking point, isn't it? We learn. And we get busy enough. We get more active than we were. But we continue to let things hang around. We don't put to death, verse 5, the fleshly members on the earth. You know, we might not feed it as much as we used to. Might not bring it out to the living room as much as we used to. Might not be in forefront. It's still in life support. And it's still got its place. We don't kill it. And many times that's a problem. Without doing this, without putting to death everything that is against our Lord, our growth is going to be stifled. That's just the fact of life. That's the way it is. We can get that so easily in the physical sense, but we miss it spiritually if we're not careful. I wonder how many hands would go up. And I'd ask, and don't do it, but I wonder how many people in this assembly love flowers. I wonder how many people in your neighborhood love flowers. I wonder how many people in your family love flowers. Most people probably say yeah to that. May not consider it or thought much about it, but yeah, I'll take that. Yeah, put your roses up if you want. It looks nice. Most people love flowers. You know why most people don't have good flower gardens? Because they don't hate weeds. And that makes all the difference in the world. That's why some flowers gardens, they've got the flowers, but they've got all this other junk in it too that we never get around to putting to death. We love those character traits. We love those who are not greedy. But we never put our own greed to death. We love the character trait of must be patient. We just don't have much patience with anybody else. We love the character trait of being blameless, but I'm not. We love the... Do we need to go on? We've got a lot of weeds, maybe, that we just haven't put out. And if that goes on, and that goes on, and that goes on, another generation is going to come along, and there will not be elders. And that might be what's happening in various places today. Who knows? We've got to hunger and thirst for knowledge. That knowledge will lead to change. It leads to growth. It leads to maturity. It leads to seeing things through a spiritual realm that we used to not. And then the more we learn, the more we understand our weaknesses, the more we understand what God has said is not on the mark. It's a trespass. And we begin to put those things out of our life, little by little. And then go back to chapter 1. Verse 23, if you continue in the faith, grounded, settled, not moved away from the hope of the gospel. Can you put all this together? We gain knowledge. We let that knowledge lead to a change of life. It will lead to spiritual growth and maturity. And it will lead to things being removed from our life. And we do it today. And we do it tomorrow. And Lord willing, if we're here Tuesday, we do it Tuesday. We continue in the faith. Grounded, settled, not moved away. We start and don't stop. Can you go back to that conversation up in Ohio or Indiana or wherever it was David's at? How did you do that? How did you become an elder? Well, a long time ago, I started trying to prepare myself. And what went unsaid, maybe it did go said. We don't know the whole conversation. But what else would have been added to that is, and I just kept on. How did you do it? He said, I started a long time ago. Started working to prepare. Sometimes Providence doesn't even allow that. A lot of men who are qualified, not in a situation. Some churches, there's a man who's qualified, but there's not a second one. There's no plurality. And so Providence and other things hinders that ability to serve. But he qualified himself. He started and he worked and he continued. And that's where we need to be. For our young ones who aren't even married. For our young ones with children that you're not able to meet one of those specific qualifications. But you can be faithful. You can be blameless. You can be patient. You can be gentle. You can be everything God asks you to be. And it starts now. Continue. Start now. And let's just keep continue on. We live in a culture. Everything's got to be fast now, right? I saw one thing called it the microwave generation. Some of the older ones here remember having to actually heat water up on a stove eye for children when they were young. Can't imagine that. 30 seconds and we was feeding it. I can't imagine going back to that. I like the microwave, by the way. But we've gotten to the point where everything's got to be fast. Some things can't be done fast. These last couple of weeks, all those conventions going on, 5 and 6 hours of speeches, 3 and 4 nights in a row, and then you wake up the next morning and they've all been condensed down to about 4 sentences. They're called sound bites. 5 hours of speeches, 4 sentence sound bites. That's the kind of culture we live in. Give it to me quick, give it to me short, and there are no sound bites and there is no microwave that can help us develop men to be elders and deacons. That doesn't happen fast. Because it takes work to gain spiritual knowledge and spiritual maturity. It takes serious work to put and mortify fleshly things out of our life. It takes serious dedication and consistency to continue steadfast in those things. We live in a culture that just blows it off as nothing. No, there is no microwave for it, but it is possible. Just like that man that was traveling with David, you start a long time ago. And today, for me and you, that may be today. Start today. But there are qualities and life changes that we need to be making. Hope you've already looked at your article. Glenn Young's a good friend of mine, and he wrote this article. It's The Little Things. I'm not going to read through the article. If you haven't gotten it, pick it up in the foyer before you go. I think Glenn's a good writer. He has something to say. He doesn't just fill pages up. He's got something to say. And to me, this is one of the best that he ever wrote. And it's just so clear about how you and I can maybe get a better grip on just everyday life. How does a person get to be a person of godly integrity? Does it come with age? Is it an epiphany, a spiritual flash in a moment of crisis? Does it come with some grand one-time decision? No. Godliness with contentment is a work of a lifetime. We grow into it by the many little decisions we make every day. Later on, he says, we forget the next year. Forget about the next year. Forget about the next month, the next hour, the next second. Concentrate on the present moment. What should I do in the moment? And then he makes the application that when you're faithful in the little stuff, you end up over time being faithful in the big stuff. Great article. Go home and read that and listen. Think about that as it applies to putting these qualifications of Timothy and Titus into our life. Decisions today. Decisions tomorrow. How do I behave in this setting? How do I behave in this situation? Because there is a right and a wrong. There is a holy and an unholy. Most of the time, we know which is which. But sometimes we let the weeds hang around. Get your songbooks out. spiritual maturity. We're talking about spiritual growth. We're talking about steps that each of us as individuals ought to be taking. And it's not an exaggeration to say that we've been commanded to be taken. So how are we doing? We spoke this morning about the church. Blood-bought institution. The gospel of our Lord that calls us out of sin. Why don't you respond to that today? There are people here today who've never publicly, you've never consciously recognized Christ as your Lord. You can fix that. People here today have never been baptized to wash away their sins. You can fix that today if you'll act by faith. And you will be added to the body. Your name will be added to the book of life. And you'll have a hope of eternity in heaven. And what a great promise that is. Respond while we stand and sing.